Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Ojai, California.
Hello, I'm Brooke Giannetti.
I'm Steve Giannetti.
And we are sitting here on our property in Ojai, California, behind our house that we call Patina Farm.
What do you do, you know, your day job?
Our day job? I always say that we're designers and dreamers and creators.
Yeah, we believe in stories and dreams. Everybody has a story, everybody has a dream.
But in a tangible way, you do interior.
I do architecture and interiors and gardens. We try to create a whole environment where people can be the person that they've imagined themselves being. This place that we are right now, Patina Farm, is our version of it.
Yes, we built Patina Farm. It was kind of that if you build it, they will come kind of idea. So we had this idea that if we could show people what we were dreaming and turn it into a reality from gardens and everything, that we could explain a whole lifestyle and a way of design that wasn't just about creating little rooms and all that, really about intention and about how you imagine living your life. So if we did that for ourselves, it would be compelling enough to convince people to let us do it for them.
And so interior flows to the outside, right?
Yes.
And it's very contiguous.
Yeah, we see it as all one continuous flow. It's based on the idea that we're connected to nature, and your house should be, and that's the way you should live, and it will make you feel more at peace, being kind of connected more to the natural world. So that's kind of one of our core tenets of design.
Yeah, it's something we've realized. It's been a long journey. You know, I think that's what led us here and has taught us a lot. And as we've invited animals to be a part of our life, we now have cows and donkeys and sheep and goats and living with them.
You'll probably hear them in the background.
There's a couple of donkeys down there. I think the goats right now are sleeping in the barn. But living with them has taught us so much. You know, originally it was this idea that we were taking care of them, and then we realized how much they were enhancing our life and really teaching us how to live in the moment. Animals live in the now moment as opposed to us that are always living in the past and in the future, right?
Yeah, definitely here and now species.
So it's been all that. And I think people have followed our journey through social media and through our books. And it's been a really interesting process connecting with people who are seeing the world the same way we do.
Let's roll back in time. I understand you went to UCLA.
Yes.
At that time, what did you think you were going to do?
I grew up in a family that wasn't particularly artistic. You know, my dad was a mortgage broker. My mom mostly took care of us. And most of our family were doctors and lawyers and things like that. And so I didn't really understand that you could have a life that was more about art and design. So back then, I thought I was going to be a lawyer or, you know, something like that, a sort of a professional kind of that way.
When did the break kind of epiphanous moment happen?
When I met Steve.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he was your stimulus.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember meeting him and him telling me that he was an architect. And I was like, oh, that is so interesting. Mm-hmm. I had never met an architect before.
And Steve, you were in LA at that time?
Yeah. I had moved out from Maryland to do a big project in Beverly Hills and was working there, living down in Venice.
How did you guys meet?
I picked him up at the Cheesecake Factory.
Really?
Yes, he was there with his sisters, and we kept on smiling at each other. I was there with a friend, and we kept smiling at each other. We had a wordless conversation.
Wow, so it was pretty immediate.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Uh-huh. You know, we were married about a year after we met.
Mm-hmm. And so that was a game changer in your life, right? No longer wanting to be a lawyer.
Absolutely. I think the hardest thing for me was this idea that of the grayness of design, of the artistic process. You know, I was very comfortable more in the kind of math realm where, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. And he taught me, and is still teaching me, how to be comfortable in the gray.
In the unknown.
Unknown.
When you just have a little bit of an idea in your head, you're talking about your art. But just the idea when you don't really know it for sure, but you feel like you know it enough to go in a direction.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it,
right.
You know.
Visualize.
But you don't need to know everything. Mm-hmm. You just need to know enough to take the next step.
How did your professional partnership nurture and
grow? I was working on a project in Malibu, and the woman had some kids' rooms. And I said, well, Brooke, I need the interiors done. Can you help me design a couple of kids' rooms?
Mm-hmm.
And so she did those, and then that became the living room, and that became the dining room. And before you knew it, she had designed the whole house.
Oh, wow.
And the woman loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And Brooke was always wondering, should she go to school and actually learn this stuff and, you know, get some training?
Because
she was just winging it. And I said, absolutely not.
Oh, wow.
The best designers are not taught.
Mm-hmm.
They work from their heart.
Well, she didn't know if she was breaking any rules.
That's the great part. You know, she just knew what was right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just pure 100% gut feel. And, you know, we talked about it. We said, you know, you see what you love. And as you can imagine the same kind of stuff, then it's good.
Mm-hmm.
You just sort of like picture it and you'll figure out how to do it.
Yeah,
and you just bind yourself up with all these crazy rules.
That's really cool. So, are out of the chute when you guys formed your partnership and started doing design work, did it evolve or did you kind of have this epiphanous, holistic approach out of the chute?
I mean, I knew I could always see the interiors a little bit, but I didn't really have the bandwidth to do all the particulars.
Mm-hmm.
And Brooke is really built for particulars.
So you guys are a perfect partnership.
Together we're actually one person.
Every time we finish something, I don't know if I've done anything or, you know, it's hard to know exactly. It's hard to know who did what.
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely flow together really, really well. He's macro and I'm micro.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be doing a house and she'll show me pillow fabric. And I'm like, okay, well, we'll work on that. But what it is she's trying to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
She's trying to feel the house with the pieces of the house she can touch.
So in a very literal tactile sense.
In a very literal tactile sense, because she's trying to create an emotional connection to something that I just have a sketch of.
Mm-hmm.
I need palette. I need materials. Mm-hmm. And when I see the materials, I get a feeling, you know, I design not so much from my gut, but from my heart, you know, and for me, it's all about the palette and material. I mean, that was one of the reasons we called our first book Patina Style, and it was all about, like, patina, this idea that...
That kind of organic, lived-in feeling.
Exactly.
Things grow better with age.
Things grow better with age, as we are desperately trying to do.
And that being said, earlier you were talking about harvesting used doors from France and whatnot in your house.
Yeah, we use a lot of reclaimed materials. Mm-hmm. They bring their own story to your house. You know, it's why we love antiques. It's so interesting to us because so many of our clients will want surfaces that don't show any wear or tear. And I never understood that because all the stuff I love is the stuff like, you know, you go to France and you go to an old bakery and the marble is showing, you know, all the years of all the baking that's been done on it.
And don't you just love that, especially Europe? You can touch the walls of something that somebody in the 16th century touched.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
that doesn't have to be repainted every 3 years.
Exactly, no. Yeah.
To ruin it.
And that's the beauty of patina. Mm-hmm. It's intrinsic in the definition that through use and wear and tear, it gets more elegant.
Exactly. And even when we were talking to the woman who bought this house, and she has 2 young children, and she says, well, you know, her daughter's going to end up drawing on the walls. And I said, I hope so. And I said, you know, and I hope you just leave them up there. You know, I think it'll be wonderful when their family puts their history on this house.
Right.
You know, I think it's a wonderful thing.
It's the idea. I mean, antiques really hold memories. That's why an antique, kind of, you connect with it more than you do with like a brand new piece of furniture that might be sitting next to it, because you feel the people that touched it. It actually holds this history in it, and there's something great about that. And so we try to do that when we do interior design, and sort of that's one aspect of it, to kind of bring that story of the piece to these people's story.
I think the other reason we like antiques is because they, most of them have been made by hand, and they're all unique. And I think now, with all things being mass produced, people don't want to feel like their life is mass produced. Mm-hmm. They want to feel unique. They want to feel like their life matters and is different, you know?
A woman that went to her house, and she had these Saltillo tiles put in.
Yeah.
And she would go, look at this one. It had like a chicken foot.
Mm-hmm. You know, right? Yeah,
it's
exactly.
A story.
Yeah.
Right? You can all of a sudden see that whole story.
Yeah, where happened. It came from. And,
right, and people are connected to everybody through story.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most important aspect of who we are.
It's our why.
Yeah.
Right.
It's intuitively palpable coming into your front door, into your house, and then looking out, and then we flowed out in the backyard. Very contiguous.
Yes.
So you guys have to have that vision of interior design is connected with exterior.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, nature always and place always inspires wherever we're building or creating. You know, the interiors of our house, the colors, the materials, all of that are inspired by what's going on around it. The kind of architectural design of this house was inspired by the history of Ojai, as well as our own history. But that is always a common theme throughout any of our designs. I mean, as we move to Tennessee, the house we're designing there will be inspired by our property, as well as, you know, the more we spend time in the Leaper's Fork, Franklin area,
mm-hmm.
the more the design of the house is changing to feel like that area.
Like it's always been there. The connection to the landscape, I mean, if you imagine your windows are part of the decor mm-hmm. when you're inside the house and you're looking out, there's a whole palette there. All you have to do is look out the window.
And that speaks to you, right?
That speaks to us. And so we basically pull our palette from the natural surroundings. And it just helps us. It helps the house to flow. Materials, like the stone outside is the same as the stone inside. Everything just flows through. You'll see wood siding outside and inside being the same material. Especially living here in California, where it's so nice most of the time.
I was just going to go there. Right now, it's like the most dreamy afternoon mm-hmm. anybody could ever dream of.
Mm-hmm.
This could be January, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
and Leaper's Fork and Franklin, they have winters.
They do.
Have you guys meditated on how that might shift what you design and how you design? The seasons are more marked there.
Yeah, I mean, we've been thinking about it a little bit. You're not going to be able to open the house up as much mm-hmm. as we do here. But we like the idea, you know, we're putting in wood stoves and creating coziness in ways that there wasn't any real reason to create here.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of connecting to that history and understanding how things were built. Thicker walls and more insulation.
And screen porches.
And screen porches and taller ceilings to let the heat out. So there's a lot of things that we're doing there that we didn't even really think about here. But once you see the local architecture, the local antique architecture, more than just whatever the spec house they're building down the street, you understand it's a code to what the landscape and the climate is.
There's a real specific vernacular to Ojai architecture, the Ojai Valley Inn.
So that's what we were looking at.
Mission Revival.
Yeah, I was a fan of Wallace Neff and
all
the boys who did all the great stuff up here.
George Washington Smith.
And so we looked at all that stuff. And mm-hmm. so part of the house is that old Spanish right. influence. Yeah. And then there's also a big agricultural drive out through the barns and these little sheds and everything all over the valley from mm-hmm. the 20s, these old wooden sheds. Yeah. So we combined that with the old Spanish and kind of created Patina Farm out of that, where it was a bit of a mashup mm-hmm. with a few different kinds of things. But then we would do things like cut a hole in the wall, just put in a sheet of glass so it connected to the outside. So everything Spanish a lot of times has the small windows.
Right.
But in the way we do it, we can draw from, I like to draw from sort of any point in architectural history that helps me tell the story.
Even more modern things.
Yeah, like floor-to-ceiling glass and sheets of glass, where a pure classicist would look at me and go, well, you can't do that, you know, but a modernist would say I couldn't do the rest of it.
Right.
So I've tried to build this little zone where mm-hmm. I'm kind of skirting both of them.
That's interesting, because you made me think of mid-century architecture, mm-hmm. and everybody in the Bay Area loved the Eichler homes.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I love those too.
So how do you, because they're very different.
They're great. Very desperate. I've done very modern stuff that was based on those old Eichler homes, or Neutra and Schindler and all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're always trying to do with a house is you're trying to tell this a story and create this emotional connection for somebody. And so in some spaces, you may want a sheet of glass between your shower and the garden to create you connecting to the garden. And so that might be, you might be out Eichlering Eichler, you know, when you're creating this connection to the garden. But in other places, I might want a 3-foot-thick stone wall that Eichler wouldn't have touched with a 10-foot pole.
Right.
So if you can draw from history, you can create both of these things in the same house. And then the trick is to make it feel natural. So there has to be some sort of overriding something, the mm-hmm. glue that holds it
that
all.
That ties it all together.
That ties it all together. And yeah. what I use is this classical proportioning system of the golden section and the stuff that I learned from, you know, Jefferson and the Greeks and all the classicists.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a
proportion.
Yeah, proportions. It's like the cellular idea of architecture, of how all these things.
And beauty.
And beauty. Mm-hmm. And it's how all this stuff relates. And it's the thing that knits it all together. If I was to take this same house, take the windows, make some of them horizontal, make some of them vertical, make some of them whatever, you know, it would just look like a mess.
Yeah.
You just can't do that.
You made me think of Frank Lloyd Wright.
Oh, man, he's great too. But he would do that. He would have a proportional system that went throughout his whole buildings.
But he did those wonderful linear high glass.
Yeah, he did Falling Water, which is like all horizontal steel windows. Just the coolest thing ever. But he's the original connected to nature. And mm-hmm. you can't tell where the indoor stops and the outdoors end. So what you're doing is you're taking all the coolest guys. I mean, we've talked probably what, like 10 of the coolest guys in architecture, you know, in this thing. And you're just saying, okay, what can I learn from that guy? What can I learn from that guy? What can I learn from that guy?
Mm-hmm.
And how do I, like, use these tricks and tie it all together to make something even, make it as cool as can be.
What's interesting, you two have refined your vision and your palette. But in a brutal sense, you guys are hired guns.
Yes.
You're hired by a client to execute mm-hmm. what they want. As an aside, the architect I work for, he was brilliant, but he would get some vision of what he wanted. And the people go, well, we don't really care about that, and we're not paying any extra. He would pay out of his own pocket to inject something that they didn't even care about.
Right.
But again, that being said, in a purist sense, your job is to listen so closely and get a pulse beat for what these people want.
That's really what the idea is. You're trying to connect to them, and you connect to them through the story and the life they want to lead mm-hmm. in the house. And then they come to us because there's certain things about our work that they like. And it might be the indoor-outdoor, it might be the proportions, it might be the plaster walls or the thick walls or that mix of modern mm-hmm. and whatever.
When you meet with them, your first mm-hmm. get, you know, kicking the tires
sure.
and whatnot, what's the process of feeling out and getting a sense of who they are and what they want?
You know, it's some architects have checklists and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of listen to how they want to live in the house. how do you spend time with your family? How does that work? And is they're telling me their story and building their future life. I'm building their future house in my head.
Do you sit down with them and do the programming where you bubble out the different rooms
I don't
and spaces?
Do any of that.
He has a monkey trick. He has a monkey trick.
I picture the house finished, and then I just draw a finished house.
Yeah. Usually the house that he first draws, that first meeting, is it's crazy how close the house, the finished house, looks to that original drawing.
It's kind of like, so I'm asking them to travel out into the future and tell me how they want to live, right? So I'm going there with them, and by the time they're done telling me how they want to live, I can see the house like it's there. And I'll say, how about something like this? I'll just draw it. Or I'll go like standing here looking that way. I can just walk around in the house like it's there.
In your mind.
In my mind, yeah. Yeah, and then I can just sketch it because I can just spin around and I'm just building it in my head. You know, I have a memory for houses and spaces since forever.
any movie we've seen, I can ask him where we were sitting in the movie theater, and he can tell us and tell me exactly where he was.
Wow.
But he just remembers spatially places like that. Or a house we've been to once, he can tell you, he could draw the floor plan for you. It's just, it's something that, it's a gift.
You back to patina, very thematic thread in your lives.
Oh, yeah.
Following through to the use of materials, talk to us about some specifics that the benefit on one hand is low maintenance and upkeep.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. I mean, we have a messy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of animals. We have children. We have four dogs that live with us. I can be a perfectionist, and so those things don't do well together. But if you start embracing the beauty of imperfection and you don't see it as something that needs to be constantly corrected, it makes your life with the people and things that you love a lot easier. So that was one of the reasons we decided. And really, natural materials do grow more beautiful with age. I mean, our house looks better now than it did before, you know, and I think nature is our third collaborator.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, you can see our house is covered with vines and it looks so much better now than when we first planted it or first built it. It is being embraced.
Overtaken.
Yes, overtaken.
overtaken.
Yes.
Or consumed.
Consumed by nature. Yeah. You know, which is just lovely. I love seeing how it kind of blurs.
And it really, when we were trying to figure out our style, and everybody can use this trick, you put a bunch of things on the table that you love, right?
Objects.
Mm-hmm. You just go, oh, I love that. I love that. I love that. It's just a pure heart thing. And then we did that. You know, I had old metal gears and old pieces of wood and leather boxes and stuff. And she had gilt things and linen stuff.
And velvet pieces.
And so what happens is, you start to see all this stuff that all comes from your heart laid out on a table. We realized that the throughput of it all was patina. They were almost all always old things. They all had been touched. Somebody had always been working on them. So you could always see like an artist touch with it. And so we realized that that was the thing that we connected to. It wasn't like, you know, we figured it out. You know, we just kind of fell into it.
And how about color palette? It would follow that process.
It follows that same process. Mm-hmm. I mean, we found it was the natural thing, and then we found these old Belgian tapestries from those things? 1700s or something?
Yeah, 18th century Verdure Belgian tapestries that were all these same colors that you find in nature, all the different colors of greens that go so beautifully together, and all those neutrals like warm browns, you know, and taupes and things like that. And that became our palette, you know, because it was that kind of blurring of the line between indoors and outdoors. So even our palette inside is inspired by what is outside. So all those colors are the same.
That's really cool. And how, again, you guys are a partner in partnership. Is there a blurring of the lines, even from an architectural standpoint? How about you?
Absolutely. Like I said, I mean, we've been together now for 36 years. And I don't know what idea is his and what is mine. And we're very fortunate in that way. I mean, occasionally there's a time, there've been a couple of times where we've had some conflicts about things.
Example of a conflict.
Mullions or no mullions? And wasn't that one of them where I wanted mullions on some of the windows? You felt like it?
Yeah, I just wanted to connect it. If it was just me, I might have built this thing more like hedges and sheets of glass. Mm-hmm. It would have just looked like you were in a inside yeah. of a garden. But it didn't work with the rest of it, so we both had to be able to work on it. And so it wouldn't have looked like a house at all. It would have looked like you were in a topiary in a hedgerow. But I'll work on that one next.
Right.
Somebody else.
Mullions and muttons are interesting in that they tend to frame something.
They frame something, and they make this. We always try to make them like super light. There's the difference between
like a pencil line.
Yeah,
rather
it's like
than
a
heavy.
3/4 inch wide mullion, which mm-hmm. is the old school width. Yeah. Versus a lot of them these days, which are like 1 1/4 inches, and you might as well. Just like beating yourself with a hammer, yeah. having to look at.
And even the colors we use, like mm-hmm. a lot of people usually make their steel windows, you know, kind of bronze or black or something like that. Mm-hmm. And ours tend to always be kind of lighter colors because it kind of goes away as you're looking through it. I think also the mullions add to that kind of verticality that I really like. I like things tall and skinny. There was just something about it that I felt like this house needed it.
But she'll often, I'll be working on a project and I'm all into my architect head, you know. Oh, this is a little Frank Lloyd Wright, and this mm-hmm. is a little Eichler, and all this stuff. And she'll come in and look over my shoulder. I say, "What do you think of this?" She'll go, "It's kind of ugly." You know, so
no,
then I'm trying.
No filter there.
Yeah, no filter. It's like, ugh. You know.
Yeah, but I guess because I don't have any classical training, or you know, I tend to like things like that's why I always liked Wallace Neff, because his stuff was always very, very quirky. You know, crazy little windows and little things that, you know, small funky doors or whatever.
Yeah, make
he
it
did.
Make it weirder. And
yeah,
it's not weird enough.
People,
make it cool.
But he was like a futurist. I mean, you're talking 100 and some years ago.
I know. You know, I love little quirky things. Mm-hmm. You know, again, that idea that you want your space to feel unique. You know, I think right now people just do things that are like little square boxes. It just doesn't really speak to me. I want a little, like our laundry room door here is from, I think, the 1600s.
Wow.
It's about 5'8". I think you just fit under it.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And I call it the perfect size door. You know, but when people come to visit and I've given a couple of tours, I'll say, you know, if you're not the perfect size, please lean over when you're walking out of this door. But I love that it's kind of quirky and that. And people do too.
Mm-hmm. But it's the kind of stuff that breaks the rules. Because I think there's a bunch of rules where everybody thinks you have all these rules that you have to have. Like you can't walk through a kitchen to get to another room. And, you know, you can't have your laundry room off the entry hall. And all these rules, you need upper cabinets in the kitchen. All this stuff that people think they need. And they're really bad rules. Because they make stuff worse.
Do you enjoy breaking rules sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely.
His whole life.
That's my whole life. I'm trying to break rules.
Well, even the idea that you need a big operation. His office is very small. He's really the only guy who does the design. And even that was, I mean, I think it took a while for him to realize that it was okay not to want a big firm. And I think he's a lot happier because then otherwise he's just looking over people's, he's just the one watching everybody do the drawings,
mm-hmm.
right?
And having it be okay. I was sort of remote before remote was cool. We moved to Patina Farm about 10 years ago or 9 years ago, like right around the time of the first iPhone. And I realized I could connect to the world through this little gadget and protect my quiet design time and not be stuck in an office listening to other people talk on the phone and having the phone ring and be dropped out of my little future world that I'm imagining for somebody all the time.
So you guys are also therapists in a sense. Imagine, I mean, your clientele by nature has some ego, you know.
Oh yeah.
And they might come to you and they want this bizarre high porte cochere that does not blend or match with anything. So you as a therapist have to kind of navigate them away from that.
Well, sometimes you're just trying to understand the story better so that you can tell them, I think this would be better. I always try to listen and go, is that a good idea? I don't know. You know, or even I'll sketch it, you know, and then try to show them why there's a better idea.
Have you learned things from your clients?
Yeah, absolutely.
Example?
Yeah. It's interesting how to deal with creative people, because we're doing a bunch of stuff now for the store that we're working on. And I see like producers, guys who do that kind of thing for a living, have a way of like making it so you trust them and you don't want to disappoint them. Mm-hmm. And they give you enough rope, you know,
to hang yourself,
you know. And it was, you know, I've had clients where, you know, the guy was a big TV guy or a movie guy. And, you know, he was barely at the meetings at all. He just said, oh, I trust you guys. Mm-hmm. Just make it great. And he'd look at it and go, oh, yeah, this looks good. But he didn't feel like the need to micromanage everything.
Mm-hmm. Even though that's a part of their success is being great managers.
Yeah, they're great managers, but they know when to let go. Mm-hmm. They know when to let the person who knows better, he'll make a suggestion, and what about this? Oh, I only like gray, I don't like green, you know, or something like that, mm-hmm. and push back when needed. But it's this idea of understanding how to communicate with people, because the people we do houses for are a pretty high-end group. So it's you're always learning something from these people about how to
have a lot of bandwidth
even how to sort of imagine a bigger life.
So the tables are shifting to a degree because you guys are leaving your home.
Yes.
Going to a new home.
Yes.
In Leapers Fork.
In Leapers Fork, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Yes.
So where is that process? Is it built? Or are you visioning?
It is not built yet. And we've talked about doing this for quite some time. You know, Steve started going to this area in Tennessee about 7-8 years ago when he was doing a big project for a client. And he kind of fell in love with it. I remember the first time he came back and he said, this place is magical. You need to come with me next time and just check it out. And of course, I went there and just fell in love with it so much that I said, you know, we have to move here. We have to try something different. You know, mm-hmm. I've lived here my whole life. And Steve's lived here now for 36 years. So, you know, the idea of trying something different was really exciting. And then we found this piece of land that's about 100 acres, has 150-year-old log cabin on it.
Oh, nice.
Yes, but it's had some additions done to mm-hmm. it that we're in the process of renovating, but paying homage to the original log cabin. And it'll kind of feel like this kind of a combination of that kind of ancient log and then some clean plaster walls.
Within your new home.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, in this log cabin. So the log cabin will be, eventually will be a guest house, but we're going to live there while we build another house that's kind of evolving. Again, this idea that we want to live in this area for a mm-hmm. little bit.
What are you visualizing for exterior finish?
Well, the log cabin, other than the logs, it's old barn wood.
Old barn wood.
It's just we kept thinking, how can we get wood to look like old barn wood? Mm-hmm. And there was no way to do it.
Right.
Unless you just add old barn wood. So we just all of a sudden just went for it. Because we want to feel like it's always been there. That's one of the mm-hmm. tricks.
And how about roofing material?
It's old wood shakes that'll just age naturally over mm-hmm. time. And then this great looking metal, galvanized metal roof that all the old buildings in Leapers Fork are made out of. This really thin stuff.
And how about roof line and linear flow of the structure? What sort of pitch are you using?
Yeah, I mean, there's an 812 on part of it and like a 312 on the pitches.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is there's like a code to, like a visual code
really?
To houses. Mm-hmm. Only if you want it to look like it comes from there.
So being a rule breaker.
Well, what I'm trying to do is understand what the rules are.
Mm-hmm.
Because oftentimes you'll be driving down the street and all these great old houses, like Leapers Fork is full of these beautiful old homes, right? They're all built with. Nobody wrote the rules down. They just look that way because mm-hmm. that's the way you're supposed to build. You know, a nice overhang, this and that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and...
Then back up for a moment because overhang is really important. I believe in pretty broad overhangs, just like front entry especially in one, protecting.
Yeah.
What are you visualizing for your overhangs?
Well, we have the whole front entry is a big screen porch. You know,
mm-hmm.
when it rains there, it comes down like a typhoon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't last that long, but it comes down like crazy. So we needed a place to be dry to open the door, a place for our, you know, cats to be able to get out of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're looking at all of these things and you're trying to figure out, well, why did they do it this way back in the 20s when before they had air conditioning, before they had all these insulated windows and mm-hmm. all this stuff. You know, they're trying to design something that's going to be comfortable. And so there's clues to be found
mm-hmm.
with the old stuff, to why they did it.
Talk for a moment, windows and doors for yourselves in your vision.
I'm using some of the same kind of proportional systems that we do. That's kind of part of the DNA mm-hmm. of the place. But we're always trying to take the windows to the floor as close as possible to connect to the ground plane outside to make the house feel more open. One of those.
Would they be casements?
They're going to be casements because when it's nice, you really want to open the house up and have outswing casements and the big screen so that you can get those breeze. We're at the bottom of a little valley. So if you're in the shade and the wind's blowing, even a 90 degree day can be really comfortable. So we have high windows, I have cross ventilation, I have ways to get the hot air out of the house. You're really thinking about how this thing behaves in the natural world.
And how about thermal mass?
We're doing more, there we're going a little bit more high tech because this is a wooden house. So we're using foam insulation, all the kind of
2x6 studs.
Yeah, 2x6 studs, a little bit thicker, the better sheathing. You know, the old houses were cool, but they certainly weren't airtight, and they certainly didn't do too much.
Not particularly comfortable.
Not particularly comfortable. So there's a way of building nowadays. I mean, often nowadays the houses are built too tight, where you have a fan on so you don't suffocate. So try not to make them like that. But there are things to learn from the new tech that is actually pretty good.
The way you're talking, it sounds like you've read the pattern language books. No?
Well, I worked for an architect for 5 years.
Right, so you got that.
You ever heard of Christopher Alexander?
No.
Okay, so anybody out there who wants to read the single best book on design that has ever been written, it's called A Pattern Language. Christopher Alexander, he was like a hippie guy from the 60s, and figured out these patterns were things that are the thing that can't be described. It's a little like Voldemort, right? But it was a thing that made you connect to something. You felt good about it. And one might be, for instance, like a window seat with a deep set window.
Right.
And he would describe how to do a good window seat. You need to be protected. You need to be in windows to near the floor so it connects to the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And in these, he had some black and white picture of something and you go, wow, that's pretty. It's a lousy black and white picture, but you're going, wow, I really start to connect to this. Or a kitchen counter with the glass all the way down to the countertop and no cabinets.
Or the front porch idea.
Or the front porch, a place to put down a package, to grab your keys, to walk in, a place to put a package. It's really just thinking about your life. And it was, part of it is houses, part of it is cities, part of it is community, how people interact, all this cool.
How to facilitate community.
Community, how front porches work. And it's how old towns were put together, where, you know, once the automobile came in and everybody got in their little box and drove to a parking lot and walked to the Walmart.
I know there was an architect in San Luis and they did a development, and essential to his philosophy is every house had to have a front porch.
Yeah.
For that exact reason you're alluding to.
Yeah, that's it. That's the traditional town planners, Andreas Duany and all these guys. He built them all over the country, and they would investigate old towns, and the front porch raised up two steps was an incredible social cue. When you're walking down a neighborhood like that, even if we visit these little towns, people are saying hi, people are up on their front porch, you wave, you get to know your neighbors. The kind of thing that, you know, pulling into your garage and walking into your house just never do.
You know, it's garage. It's really interesting. I was down in Dallas years ago, and this realtor had a house listing, and she called it a wraparound. And it's because the garages in this development were all behind the house.
Right.
Yeah.
And it blows my mind in American architecture to this day, where the most, excuse the language, but ugly architectural image is a garage door.
Yeah.
The front of the house. I mean,
it's one of the keys to it. Duany's DPZ, Duany Plater Zeibrook. They do these towns, and that's one of the things. They create alleys off the back, gets the cars off the street, lets the houses be closer together, has smaller yards.
There was that development in New York 100 years ago, and all the streets were behind the houses.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the front lawn just rolled?
Yeah, with that thing. Yeah, it's like a park. They were looking at the City Beautiful movement was all this stuff. And so there were ways that these houses, they would make it possible to have a community because people would want to take a walk. Because you feel comfortable on a tree-lined street with front porches. If I've got to walk a quarter of a mile or even a mile on a beautiful street with tree-lined street with a front porch, you'll do it in a minute. But if I got to walk a mile, just a lousy sidewalk, and you're out past a bunch of garage doors, no, it isn't going to work. And it's weird how everybody is kind of the same. There's places in the world that everybody loves. And so you just have to kind of deconstruct those things, figure out what the rules are, and then understand why, mm-hmm. why it works.
Or if it's okay to break the rule.
Or if it's okay to break the rules. Or when to break the rules.
Yep. I love it. Parting thoughts?
Oh, parting thoughts.
You want to tell them what the plan is in
Tennessee? Yeah, sure. So I guess, you know, we've been thinking a lot about what's important to us and what are the factors in our life that kind of seem to guide us, you know, the guiding points. And certainly we've talked about several of them, the idea of nature and the importance of this connection to nature and how history affects us and our story. And also this feeling of community and connection with people. That's kind of the three big tenets of whatever we end up doing. And so I think this next move to Tennessee is really another milestone for us. You know, the idea of opening up a store that is going to be hopefully more than a store, because we call it Patina Home and Garden, mm-hmm. of course, and it's going to be a place, we call it a place to gather, an idea that we're all gathering as a community. We want to do classes about nature, about beekeeping, about how to heal yourself through nature, but it'll also be a place to kind of gather. We're going to have farm-to-table food available and also beautiful things to take home that are inspired by nature, with, you know, beautiful linens and all of that.
And so, how about furniture itself?
Antique furniture.
With good patina.
With good patina. Everything's got a good patina. Mm-hmm. And hopefully kind of be a place for community, but also a place that kind of is inspired by the history of the place as well. So
that's dialing up the community knob a bit on this trip to Tennessee. We're even going to have a picker's corner. Aubrey is.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Aubrey Preston has a collection of vintage guitars mm-hmm. that have always sort of lived in this little store. And so we're kind of tuning up that area to attract some of the local musicians to come in and sit around and, mm-hmm. and play a little bit. Vintage Gibson or a Martin guitar.
Another dimension of pickers. Your new neighbor is going to be Mike Wolf,
the star
of American Pickers.
We met him at Halloween one year, sitting around a campfire out there, like when the kids were trick-or-treating in Leaper's Fork. Nice guy.
Yeah.
So he certainly gets it. You know, we are cut from the same the same cloth. It's the loving old things.
And I think the other thing that we're connected to or drawn to in that area is this idea of slowing down. Something about Leapers just makes you want to just kind of slow down. And that's really appealing right now. Life is going so fast. I think there's so many reasons to, you know, we're all busy and we're speeding up and all of that. But we really want to be in a place that you can just kind of, you know, have somebody come in and play a song, you know, and just enjoy that and maybe just sit outside and chat with somebody you meet who's visiting or somebody in the community, you know, and just kind of get to know people a little bit more.
I love it. So you're very much looking forward to your reset and...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
We're very excited.
Excited. That's cool. To learn more about your world, where would you direct us?
GiannettiHome.com is our website. Patina Home and Garden is our store online.com, patinahomeandgarden.com. I also have an Instagram that is called Velvet and Linen, because I used to have a blog named Velvet and Linen about, I don't know, 14 years ago I started blogging. And so, and then it started evolving into Instagram and Facebook. Basically stories that will be now from Patina Meadow, which is going to be our new home. It's going to be called Patina Meadow. Basically anything we can call patina, we have. And I'm Brooke Giannetti.
And I'm Steve Giannetti.
And thank you again for this opportunity to talk with you.
Oh, this has been fascinating. I wish we could go on and on. Thank you so much. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Ojai, California. We'll see you here. Or actually in Leapers Fork, Tennessee.
Yes.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer on KCBX Radio. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station. Thank you.